to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
From barefoot boy to Kamehameha Schools cadet in 1944 to a California judge, Hawaiian author Bill Fernandez's new memoir, Hawaii in War and Peace, captures an era in both Hawaii and the continental U.S. that few have documented and many have forgotten. Available at the Kauai Museum and Kauai Historical Society, local Kapa'a stores, the bookstore in Hanapepe, at BillFernandez.com and Facebook.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and I say as well, the views and opinions are those of the speakers and do not represent those of KKCR, its DJs, its board, its underwriters. And so, good afternoon, Dr. Donna Kaplan. Hi.
Hi, Cousin Rich. So great that you're back.
Yeah.
What a wonderful surprise.
Like, I know, a couple of months,
it's
huh?
It's been a while,
yeah.
And it's so great to see you back.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you and everybody. And today's a really special day.
Yeah, we have Dr. Alan McDaniel.
Yes, and it's also happening on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s special day of recognition and celebration of just such an incredible, great leader of human rights, love, and nonviolence, and a lot more. So we have Dr. Alan McDaniel, and he's calling in from Kentucky. He is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat doctor and surgeon and practices integrative medicine, and he'll tell us all about his field and his experience, and he is an expert on the thyroid health, thyroid gland. So we're going to be talking about thyroid health, and he has joined us before. I can't remember if it was October or November. Are you with us? Is he on the air?
I'll bring him right on.
Okay, great.
Dr. Allen.
Well, hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good afternoon, sir.
Great to have you, Dr. Alan McDaniel.
Well,
this is, yeah, how are you?
Oh, well, thank you. It's really great to be with you guys. I wish I were there in the body, too, because it's about 15 degrees outside here.
Oh. And we got to get you over here for the next show, okay?
And I spent a week of my Christmas vacation in Kentucky, in Louisville and Jacksonville, and traveling through your wonderful state.
Louisville is my adopted home, and I just keep coming back to it. It's a great little city.
It sure is.
You're here.
Were you listening to my little introduction? I don't know if you heard it. But
I was.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
And
good. So you.
Amen to that about Dr. King. The recording you guys were playing of his address in London was moving. I was trying to keep it together. He was an inspired man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm so glad that you're back on the show joining us, and we're talking about thyroid health today. But do you want to just tell folks a little bit about your background and how you got to be doing what you're doing with integrative medicine?
Well, I was very intense about academics, and when I got into practice, I had read just about all the books I thought I ought to read. And it struck me that my patients hadn't read the books because the things that the books said should work didn't work for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And through allergy, I was introduced to the concept that sometimes the minority opinion is what a patient needs rather than what everybody thinks is the majority opinion. And I began looking at alternative and kind of the other way of treating patients, and found that, by golly, sometimes the minority opinion might just be right. And one of the greatest inducements to opening my mind was the fact that I personally have Hashimoto's thyroiditis and didn't know it. So my work with some patients led me to take a look at my own gland, and by golly, I had all sorts of reassurances from my primary care doc And finally had a pathologist I knew do a needle aspiration biopsy of my thyroid gland and found out, ooh, there's something going on after all. And my response to treatment with natural thyroid was, for me, pretty breathtaking. I mean, within a couple of months of starting treatment, my hair no longer clogged the drain when I took a shower. Mm-hmm. And I would sleep well at night and wake up in the morning feeling totally refreshed for the first time in, you know, decades. And my hands and feet were no longer cold all the time, which is a real plus in a Kentucky winter. Mm-hmm. So in the early 1990s, I started really looking into the thyroid, which, of course, led me to other hormone issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been incredibly blessed by having this autoimmune disease.
Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you've learned so much and you've been able to help a lot of people, right?
Well, I think so. I have helped a bunch of patients, and I'm even more privileged to be able to teach doctors. I have a course coming up in Santa Rosa, California in March. And then I'm teaching endocrine at the Pan Am Allergy Society in a week later in March. And 2 weeks after that, I'm lecturing to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, a big two-day series on new endocrinology there. So
wonderful.
I think I've been inspired, not as well as Dr. King maybe, but it's a real privilege to be able to speak with you and to get these ideas out, because I think that's my dharma. So I'm really lucky right now.
well, so many, a lot of Americans, a lot of people worldwide have issues with their thyroid glands. Is that correct?
Oh, it's, if you just Google generic prescriptions, thyroid hormone is right up in the top three consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And it is way the most common autoimmune disease. It is the most common cause of, you know, of hormone treatment, except maybe hormone replacement for menopausal women. So it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Something like 15% of all Americans have autoimmune thyroiditis, according mm-hmm. to no less a measure than the National Health and Nutrition Evaluation Survey 3 and Haines 3. So
and
it's a very common problem.
And that's probably just the diagnosed percentage of Americans that have it. There's so many people who are walking around with especially low thyroid issues that don't know, because maybe their lab tests have come back fine in their health screens, their blood tests.
Having been one of them myself, I have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
There are tests and they are a test.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes patients have thyroid trouble, as I did, that doesn't really show up according to the rules that we have imposed about what testing should be and should show.
Mm-hmm.
My thyroid gland was failing, and my thyroid-stimulating hormone test was, quote, normal, because the normal range goes way higher than is really normal. People who are geeks like I am can look at the North American Clinical Biochemists Position paper that was published, about 10 or 12 years ago on thyroid hormone testing. And the normal range, according to most statistical analyses, is plus or minus 2 standard deviations from the mean. And if you apply that pretty universal rule to thyroid-stimulating hormone, we find that nobody should be higher than a value of about 3. But in the time I had my test done, the normal went up to 5.5. So mm-hmm. my TSH was elevated, but nobody knew because they were using the wrong reference range. Okay. And then that's the first level by which the thyroid gland is controlled. You know, the thyroid hormone regulates our metabolism. It sets just how we use and store and burn and make energy for our body.
Right.
And the production of the thyroid gland is ruled by the brain. The brain measures thyroid hormone in the blood, and if it thinks you need a little bit more, it sends a tiny little chemical messenger to the pituitary gland, And the pituitary gland stimulates the thyroid with thyroid-stimulating hormone, or TSH. And that's the way the doctors have been testing the thyroid gland ever since we first could in the early 1960s.
Right. It's the initial screen,
there's more
right?
to it. There's a whole other level, yeah.
Yeah, it's the initial screen on a blood test, right?
Quite right.
Mm-hmm.
Totally right, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not infallible either. Not only is the reference interval a problem, but some people always measure low, even if they're normal. And some people always measure high, even if they're normal. So a lot of doctors add a test for T4 to that TSH test. But T4 is just a pre-hormone. And the second level of control, it was just described in 2005 as a fact. You know, it used to be speculated. But only in the last 10 years have the really hot researchers realized, oh, my goodness, the body itself decides whether or not it's going to activate the thyroid hormone. So the T4 that doctors are measuring is like a check. But I've certainly received checks that I couldn't cash, and I bet most people have. And sometimes a patient's body cannot cash the check of T4 and activate it to T3. And so testing should be more involved, more detailed, look at more things than patients who symptoms and physical exam of the thyroid gland don't match that test for TSH and T4.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to just explain to our listeners about what T4 and T3 are?
Well, sure. The thyroid gland, on stimulation from the brain, produces a variety of little types of thyroid hormones. 90% of what the gland puts out into our bloodstream is a form of thyroid hormone with four iodines on it. It's called tetraiodothyronine, which means four iodines on the thyroid. And mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to say T4. T4 is a pre-hormone that it really doesn't do very much. And back in 1970, researchers in Boston realized, oh, goodness, what we used to think was the thyroid hormone is nothing more than a pre-hormone, a check that needs to be cashed.
Mm-hmm.
The thyroid gland only makes a little bit of active thyroid hormone, which has got three iodines, so we call it T3. And 80% of the active thyroid hormone we need in a day, our body makes it. It takes the T4, it snips an iodine off, and bingo, you've got energy. So that is an absolutely essential step that is not automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Back when it was first realized, oh, my goodness, T4 is a pre-hormone, they said, well, don't worry, it's automatic. And most docs still believe that, but it is not an automatic step at all, and some people simply cannot activate the T4, which is why we have books like the very angry book titled Stop the Thyroid Madness, in which the author makes an impassioned case that patients with thyroid trouble should not be treated only with T4, but should be given a more natural mixture of T4 and T3. And that actually, in broad strokes, is probably correct. And then there's even another version of thyroid hormone, which is little known, and I am really hoping to get my paper published someplace well. It's called reverse T3.
Mm-hmm.
Reverse T3 has absolutely no power to stimulate the thyroid as a thyroid hormone. It's basically has been ignored since it was first discovered in 1955 and first really described by Dr. Chopra in 1976. But if you really dig into the medical literature, it's clear that reverse T3 is the brake pedal. And brake pedals do not make your car go faster, but you should not ignore the fact you have a brake pedal, especially when you drive like I do. Oops, oh, okay. So the brake pedal is a very important part of the thyroid process. And when a person is sick or injured or starving or just stressed, they've studied medical students during exams, and I can tell you, as you can too, Donna, that's stressful
mm-hmm.
business, right?
Mm-hmm.
As our body makes a lot of reverse T3 during stress, and it slows down our metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful, wonderful adaptation for our ancient ancestors when they were injured or sick. It helps an animal live a week or more longer, or a starving animal to live much longer. But then the problem is we humans were given consciousness. And when we worry, we activate those same pathways in our body that are stress. And so even worrying and being upset about taking a test can drop your metabolism down. So this is a common problem. And it's not being examined by a lot of docs. And so I'm hoping that getting this out will really improve the way doctors treat their patients and the way patients respond to treatment around the world.
It's always amazing how the body tries to take care of us. You know, if we keep going, 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 that it somehow is finding a way to slow us down. So,
as the poet said, we are fearfully and wonderfully wrought. And our body does have all of these backup systems. And I find the best way to try to deal with replacing hormones is to mimic Mother Nature. You know, Mother Nature can be pretty tough sometimes. But if you respect her, a lot of times you get really much better results.
Well, you were saying that thyroid hormone, which is the level thyroxine or synthroid, right? That's the most that's the third most common drug being sold. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the top three of drugs being sold these days are sadly oxycodone, the narcotic pain medicine, statin drugs, and thyroid hormone, levothyroxine or T4, the best of which is synthroid. They were the first, and I think they still have the best quality. And so it is a super common problem. That is a lot of prescriptions filled for that stuff.
Right, and I know we're going to be talking more about this, how if most people who need thyroid hormone are getting T4, and they may not be able to convert to the T3, right? Cash in their check, as you were saying.
Right, exactly.
So, well, I'll let you bring that up and talk about that more in the order that you want to. How about that?
All righty. Well, good. I don't want to be a bore, certainly, but the main purpose of that I have of speaking is to explain why the treatment we now use as the standard of care just doesn't work out for so many people, and why there are so many annoyed or downright angry books, you know, like Stop the Thyroid Madness or Living Well with Hypothyroidism. So, you know, high thyroid, we probably don't even need to mention right now. It's the thyroid gland, when it runs fast, people have way too much thyroid hormone, and they burn themselves up. Their metabolism goes so much that a patient will sit down and eat two pizzas and a gallon of ice cream and still lose weight. And the treatment for that is aggressive, but let's stick with the theme of low thyroid, because that is more common. And by the way, when people have high thyroid and they get treated, usually they end up with low thyroid too. So low thyroid was a great mystery until about 1880. Isn't that interesting? They had no idea what the constellation of symptoms of low energy, weight gain, thinning hair, chunky body, low body temperatures, sluggish brain, feeling cold all the time, constipation, not sleeping well, headaches, fatigue. They had no idea what caused it. They called it Gull syndrome, after Dr. Gull, who was Queen Victoria's personal physician. It wasn't until Dr. Coker in Switzerland perfected his surgical technique and the use of anesthesia so well that he could take out these giant benign goiters in Switzerland, where there was no iodine in the water, so the thyroid gland couldn't work, and the goiters got so big people couldn't breathe or swallow.
Wow.
He took them out, and then he found out, oh my gosh, these people have become surgical cretins, which was the old-fashioned term for low, you know, for another old-fashioned term for low thyroid. And back in 1891, there were two papers written, one in England and one in Italy, describing dosing patients with sheep thyroid glands. And bingo, they returned to health. Mm-hmm. And this was amazing. That was 20 years before they even had a word for hormone. 1906 was when
they first
Starling
used...
came up with that word. Yes.
Was 1906 when they first were using the sheep glandular hormone?
1891.
Published
reports, so they started using it in the late 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
They figured out, well, if this thing that Dr. Coker took out made people's give them all these symptoms, maybe we take healthy glands and give it back to them, we'd make them well. And by golly, they did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically standard of care to give people animal thyroid glands from about 1901. I have Osler's textbook of medicine from 1901, in which he describes giving natural thyroid three times a day. Mm-hmm. And that continued to be the common practice until 1956, when the makers of Synthroid decided that they could do it better. In the 1950s, we were skeptical about natural products. It was kind of ooky, and we were in the technical age of the age of formica and stainless steel and atomic power and all these great progresses.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided they should market synthetic pure T4, which for all they knew was the active form of thyroid hormone. But, of course, it turned out not to be. It's just a pre-hormone, but they had marketed it so well and so generously supported the research of all the professors in departments of endocrinology around the world that it very quickly became a lot of peer pressure against using natural thyroid. When I first started prescribing it in the early 1990s, one of the druggists around me said, "Oh, I thought you were a really old GP because nobody uses this stuff anymore."
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that the levothyroxine or Synthroid, which is the best of the levothyroxine, is just the pre-hormone. And that's not even a physiological arrangement. Our thyroid gland gives our body 10% of active hormones. So a normal human isn't expected to activate all the pre-hormone. Taking Synthroid, they've got to. And that's too hard a task for a lot of people.
Mm.
There's a report from England that shows 16% of Anglos, and that's largely my inheritance, so I paid attention, 16% of us Anglos cannot efficiently activate T4 because we don't have the gene for it. We've got a mutation. And that's possibly a reason that I did just really well when I started taking natural thyroid. What's the difference? Natural thyroid that comes from our friend the pig has 20% active T3 in it. So right away you're making it easier on a person by giving them 20% of active hormone instead of just 10 from the thyroid gland.
You're talking about Armour thyroid, yeah. Correct?
Armour, Nature-Throid.
There are a bunch of
versions of natural thyroid that are made, and they're made because there's a great interest in it, and there's a great interest in it because it works better for a lot of people.
Yeah, I didn't think Nature Thyroid was made from pig, right?
I thought pretty much all of it came from pig.
I haven't looked it up for a while, I confess. Mm-hmm.
Sheep was the great original donor,
mm-hmm.
and then they used to have something called Thyrar that came from cows, but they took it off the market in the late 80s. And I'd love to find a sheep hormone, frankly, because I've got some people who are allergic to pork.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. And when somebody's allergic to pork, I have to give them a mixture of Synthroid and bioidentical synthetic T3 called Cytomel. So for a person who's allergic or a person who's really scrupulous, a strict vegetarian, or a person who strictly won't eat the flesh of the pig, we can go synthetic, bioidentical, and do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, sometimes the synthetic bioidentical path is better because some of my patients are so stressed or so sick, they need to have a 70%, 30% mixture with more T3 or 60-40. And in fact, some of my really stressed people don't need any levothyroxine at all. All they need is a little T3 so they don't have to do all the work of converting it themselves. And that's what Dennis Wilson started talking about back in the 1990s, early 90s. I heard him speak in 91, and that started me on, that really propelled me further on my search to figure out what's going on here. He was a sharp guy. He made a good connection.
Mm-hmm. And since you brought up Dr. Wilson, how would you say, you know, your approach is different now?
Well, Dennis was an amazing pioneer, but like Daniel Boone, he didn't go all the way west. You know, Daniel Boone stopped in St. Louis. That was as far west as he needed to go. And I think that I've gotten in my wagon and gone on further west than Dennis. Dr. Wilson is of the opinion that there is no test that will diagnose this problem, and I disagree. My experience shows that when you compare the amount of T3 a person has in his blood to the amount of reverse T3 he has in his blood, that is an incredibly useful measure. It's been validated in a number of studies, particularly in the intensive care unit, where it's one of the most powerful determinants of who lives and dies, by the way. Remember that stress response when people are really stressed, they don't make T3? Well, the sicker they get, the less T3 they make, and it really tells you who's going to crash and burn. Now, with my patients, it also tells me who needs T3, and so it's super useful. The other big thing I do differently from Dennis is that I do not use T3 that has been compounded with micronized cellulose, microcrystalline cellulose, that Dennis believes gives you delayed absorption.
Right.
He calls it slow-release T3. And I have had a lot of patients came to me who were taking that stuff. And so I can say with great certainty, based on my clinical experience, that their absorption is not delayed. It is simply cut in half. So that
right. So normally sustained release medicines are meant to release over a period of time, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they do that by making layers. Mm-hmm. So when you swallow Entex LA, it's off the market now because they made meth out of it, but there were layers and layers and layers, and the layers dissolved slowly, and each time a layer dissolved, it would release a little of the drug, and that's how slow-release drugs work. But the cellulose didn't really give you waves of release. It just clogged it up so you couldn't absorb the dang stuff. It's kind of like taking it with soy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... The way to treat, Dennis is correct, you have to give the thyroid several times a day because T3 is a short half-life.
Right.
And so the majority of my patients can take just regular Cytomel every 12 hours, and some people, like my wife, who's finicky, I'm being nice because she might listen, like to take it every 8 hours, and that's how Sir William Osler dosed thyroid in 1901. He was considered the best clinician in the 20th century, so who am I to argue? Anyway, I follow my patient's response to treatment by the blood test. Dennis uses basal body temperatures, but the problem is so many different factors affect the basal body temperature. When I first started trying this in the early 1990s, I found out to my regret, none of my patients suffered, thank God, but my sphincter tone got a little tight by trying to depend on basal temperatures. And I've looked at the literature, and there is really, yes, people with low thyroid have low temperature, but you just give somebody thyroid, you cannot rely on their temperature going back up to normal because it can be affected by the adrenal, by the ovaries, by your nutritional status, by how much sleep you got the night before.
Mm-hmm.
Too many variables. So I follow my patients by their clinical response and by their blood tests, which are the way to go. And I like to keep everything pretty much in the normal range. That's what I teach to docs. That's why they got to sit there in my class and listen to me drone away, because I'm telling them how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I must say that it is 12:30, and you're listening to Health Talk with Dr. Donna Kaplan, and we have Dr. Alan McDaniel online, and he's talking about thyroid help. And Health Talk is the first and third Mondays of the month from 12 to 1. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
And I think we can, maybe in about 10 minutes, if there are any callers that want to call in, we can take some questions. How does that sound?
Sure.
Great.
Donna, I've got some slides talking about symptoms of low thyroid. I don't know if we need to do that. I was just kind of winging it. I wasn't really following my slide schedule. If you'd like to, we're not on the air now, are we, dear?
We are on the air.
How about that?
But that's okay. That's okay.
How would you like to proceed?
I know you did mention low thyroid symptoms, but do you want to just talk about it a little more?
Absolutely. When our thyroid gland cannot produce enough of the hormone and our body cannot activate the hormone that's produced, our cells just don't get enough energy, and they simply cannot do their job, and frankly, nothing in our body works very well. So on a short list, we become excessively fatigued. And a big part of the chronic fatigue syndrome is problems with this second layer of thyroid regulation in which our body cannot activate thyroid hormone. This is a biggie.
Mm-hmm.
Because the brain is underpowered, we get depressed and we have trouble learning. We don't remember. We have trouble thinking and making decisions. What's interesting is that sometimes this makes children hyper and ADD. I had quite a few kids in California who were wildly hyper. Their parents didn't want to give them amphetamines, you know, not that I can argue, but that left the kids kind of untreated, so they brought them to me. And I found they had a ton of reverse T3, and they didn't have much T3, and they had autoimmune thyroid trouble. And all I did was give them some T3, and the kids started sleeping through the night for the first time in 10 years and learning normally. Now, it didn't give them instantly a college degree, but they could start learning normally, so mm-hmm. it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
With low thyroid, we don't sleep well, and we wake up feeling unrefreshed.
Mm-hmm.
We generally feel cold. I remember one of my first patients I treated with natural thyroid came in and fussed at me because she couldn't wear her sweater anymore, and I looked around and realized, it's August 1st. And I said, look out the window. Do you see anybody wearing a sweater? And she said, but I always wear a sweater. It was 90 degrees. And she was so used to having low thyroid that when she got warm, she felt it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I used to get out in the car and sit in my car in July to warm up because I was so cold from the air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my patients will do that. They just go out and sit in their own little rolling sauna. And in the winter, you know, I just hated the winter because I was cold all the time. I couldn't get warm enough except in the hot shower. We're prone to headaches, and our allergy trouble gets so much worse. I used to test almost everybody with chronic fatigue for allergy, but once I got their thyroid and adrenal squared away, I only needed to test about 20% of my allergic people for allergies because they could handle it better.
Very interesting.
And then
yes.
What's interesting is heart palpitations are a sign of low thyroid as much as they are a sign of high thyroid. So are muscle aches and joint stiffness. I was on the track team in high school and college, and I remember if I didn't warm up really well, I'd get into a broad jump and jump, and my legs would freeze up on me, and I'd land with the landing gear up and look like a total spaz, but it's because my muscles were tight from the thyroid issue that I was working on. Women's menstrual cycles become irregular,
right.
And sadly, women get a lot of first trimester miscarriages. Not infertility. They get pregnant, but they can't carry the pregnancy. And I think you told me you'd had an amazing experience with a woman on that, didn't you, Doc?
Yes. I had a patient come into my office after about 12 miscarriages. And I was starting out on the other side of the room as her, and I could see that her thyroid was swollen. Her neck was swollen. And I asked her, I said, did the doctor talk to you about your thyroid? And she said, oh, yes, he did some tests and everything was normal. And so here was a case where the doctor was not paying attention to the physical signs of the body, right? And just going by the test. Uh-huh.
Isn't that sad? Our old chairman of medicine at Tulane used to rail against technocrats who would only look at the lab values and not their patients. But I have to say that in this day and age of all of our academies making practice guidelines, and you get in big trouble if you don't do what they say, Birdsong, he was just following orders. I was doing what I was told.
Right.
You know, it's sad.
So I proceeded to treat her for low thyroid, and after a couple of months, she got pregnant and she carried to term and had a baby, and she was very grateful after having 12 miscarriages.
Baby after you. It's fabulous. What a great story. And really, almost all of us who treat with natural thyroid instead of Sensoryd have an experience similar to this. I mean, there are a lot of little babies out there thanks to good thyroid, and it's pretty inspiring when you hear a story like that. God, it kind of chokes you up.
Mm-hmm.
So patients, because everything is slowing down, the gut slows down, and they get constipation, sometimes already ending with diarrhea. And hairdressers send a lot of patients to me. I don't know if they do to you, Doc, but our hair gets thin, just globally thin all over and brittle, which is why I was clogging the drain in my shower every morning. And fingernails grow slowly, and they get kind of flaky and cheesy. Of course, we gain weight about 10% above the proper body weight is about as much as people gain with nothing but thyroid. When you have a person come in to see you weighing 340 pounds, it's not just thyroid. They're insulin resistant too. But when the thermostat is set low, the metabolism runs slow, we don't burn the calories we take in, and we do gain some weight. And alarmingly, death rate is significantly increased with low thyroid too. You know, so it is something we really want to pay attention to. And so we've been talking enough about the diagnosis. You know, you need more than just thyroid-stimulating hormone and T4. That tests only the first layer of control of the thyroid. We do want to test to see how is our body activating the thyroid hormone that the gland is releasing. And I think I mentioned the test for that is to compare T3 to reverse T3.
Mm-hmm.
And the tricky bit about that is that reverse T3 is only available as what's called a total measure. So it includes both protein-bound and free hormone. And in Europe and in Canada, doctors cannot order a total T3, really. And so they try comparing free T3 to total reverse T3, and it's really apples to baseballs, and they have problems with it. We are super lucky in this country that we have had a free medical system, and we have virtually all these tests still available to us. So, whew, thank goodness for that. And we talked about autoimmune thyroiditis, which I have, and my sister
has,
and my father has, and it runs down family. Go ahead, Donna.
I'm sorry. So you have the free reverse T3?
Well, reverse T3 is a total measure.
Right.
So you have to compare it to a total T3.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put them in the same units, a healthy ratio seems to be about 12 plus or minus 2. So I like when I'm treating my patients, I want to see their T3 to reverse T3 ratio somewhere between about 10 and 14.
Oh, okay. So what were you saying in Europe? They don't have which part
of
the test?
Some of the European researchers simply cannot do a total T3 unless, like in Holland, they do it in their own lab. So the medical literature gets a little confusing because they're trying to compare apples to baseballs. They compare a free T3 to a total reverse T3, and there's a lot of room for error in that. My Canadian friends, the guys who come to my class, will kind of get upset because the Canadian healthcare system does not let people measure a total T3. So you can't get a very accurate test. So there are ways of trying to get around it by guess, by golly, by inference, but it is a shame.
Sounds like they need you to go up there and help them with this.
Well, I'd love to, but I got to say that it's kind of tough to fight City Hall when the Canadian health system has put into a lockbox what they allow doctors to do.
Mm-hmm.
All I can say is that's why some patients find their way south of the border into the U.S. to get their health care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, the I think the Minister of Health in Canada was caught getting tested in the United States.
Yeah. Well, at least they have free health care for all of their citizens, which is really important.
Well, they do. Well, except for the taxes they pay, and it's a challenge. I mean, don't get me going philosophical because I don't have the wit to do that. I'm pretty good with the thyroid, but when it comes to the philosophy of health care, I leave that to other folks.
Well, good. So, what do you want to talk about next?
All right. Let's see. So now that we've kind of rounded about the testing, the problems in the testing, let's take a look at the problem with treating with Synthroid or any of the generics for T4, levothyroxine. It will control the TSH, and it will make the person's TSH nice and normal. It will give them normal levels of T4. And so doctors who only test TSH and T4 say, there's nothing wrong with you. Your fatigue and your depression must be due to a Prozac deficiency or insufficient Wellbutrin dosage. And so lots of patients whose thyroid is not doing well with treatment end up getting antidepressants, and then they get mad about it and, you know, write irritated books. So the...
I can't hear.
Hello?
We can't hear Dr. Daniel now. Oh, I think, Dr. Daniel, you're disconnected. Can you call back? Dr. Daniel, are you there? Okay. Hopefully there's a call coming in.
Dr. McDaniel. You got cut off. I'll put you on the air right now.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much.
Hi. You're back.
Hey, Doc. Sorry, the call got cut off. My apologies. I don't know what happened.
I think the caller was calling in, and something happened on our technical area here.
Oh, good. I thought it was just a sign from God I should stop running my mouth so much. But let me just finish the thought, and then maybe we can talk to your caller if that would suit you. As T4 goes in through the liver starts breaking it down. And one of the big things it breaks it down to is reverse T3. And reverse T3 applies the brakes. So just the act of taking 100% levothyroxine, T4, is associated in every study that's ever studied it, in man or beast, 4 in humans and 2 in animals. The person taking the oral T4 has got significantly too much reverse T3. So they are all driving with the brake on. And it's pretty amazing. There are not many people
that's
I've ever
very
seen
amazing.
who could take oral T4 and have a really good ratio. Now, shall I talk a little bit about supporting the adrenals and the influence of the thyroid on the ovarian hormones, or do you want to take a call?
Well, we'll need that caller who just tried to call back.
We're having some trouble no calls,
with the phone.
Unfortunately, right at this point. Dean's checking it out.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay. So the adrenal gland. So all of these symptoms with the low thyroid,
yes,
with the fatigue and even the hair loss can be from other issues or compounded issues
know.
In the body.
You're so right, Donna. That's why medical students hate endocrinology. I totally remember my first day of endocrinology and pathology at Tulane. I was a sophomore medical student and full of ideals, and they gave us a list of literally 33 symptoms of high adrenal, Cushing syndrome, and I memorized them all. And I went into class exulting in my wisdom and knowledge, and the next day they gave me a list of 31 symptoms of low adrenal, and 27 were the same. And it was infuriating. It was awful. And when you look at thyroid, it's really similar. There are almost all the symptoms of low thyroid are similar to high thyroid. You know, with the big ones like low thyroid, you gain weight, and high thyroid, you lose weight. In low thyroid, you're cold, and high thyroid, you're hot. But there is a huge amount of endocrine overlap.
Right. Like a lot of people with hyperthyroid have anxiety and insomnia.
Oh, yes.
But you can see this in low thyroid. Is that right?
You can, especially if the low thyroid goes along with fatigued adrenals. You know, the thyroid gland sets the thermostat for our metabolism. But really, the adrenal gland is the furnace that makes the metabolism cook, really. And when the thyroid goes bad, I find that people seem to compensate by putting more of the burden on the adrenal. And since I'm from Kentucky and we are all about horses here, it reminds me of what the Teamsters used to do in the 19th century. They would, when they're making a team of two horses, they'd put a really high-spirited, peppy horse in a team with a big, strong, stolid, muscular horse. And the peppy horse would set the pace, and the muscular horse would do most of the pulling. And that's what the thyroid and the adrenal are. And when you have a patient with low thyroid, the thyroid is worn out. The adrenal has still been doing most of the lifting and pulling. And, in fact, the driver has been whipping it harder than usual. So when you change the sick thyroid horse and you bring in a happy new peppy thyroid horse ready to go, the adrenal is still exhausted.
That's a great analogy.
I just had a note yesterday from one of my friends in Ohio who treated a patient with thyroid and thought, oh my goodness, their adrenal just fell because the adrenal wasn't supported first.
And we do have a caller.
Oh, wonderful. Donna, I'll let you do the honors.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Aloha.
Doctors, a question, please, regarding sort of like the adrenal and the thyroid issue. If one seemingly has a normal range for both of these organs, what do you think of the regimen of a little bit of organic Icelandic kelp each week? And then,
could I cut in here? I'm just not able to hear the caller, Donna.
Oh, okay. Let's see if we can change that. You want to, caller, okay. You want to try again?
Yes. Thank you.
Can you hear that, Dr. McDaniel?
Very low. So if you can speak loud and slowly. Or, Donna, you can repeat the question either way.
Doctor, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Hot shot.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. My question is regarding both the adrenal and the thyroid issues. Now, given a quote normal range of both these organs, what do you think of the regimen of taking a little bit of organic Icelandic kelp for the iodine each week, and then every couple weeks or every couple months a little bit of the ginseng, the inflammatory ginseng to maintain the adrenal health?
I'm not sure what you mean by inflammatory ginseng.
Well, I mean ginseng.
I think I can answer that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. The kelp supplies iodine, and this is one of the reasons it's really nice to know the cause of the thyroid trouble. Because not very many Americans have thyroid trouble due to low iodine. So I don't get much bang for my buck just giving iodine, although I do when a patient has dry mouth, dry eyes, doesn't sweat much. Those are strong symptoms of low iodine, and I will test either an overnight urine iodine or a blood test isn't so bad, actually, and then replace iodine as needed. I like the way you do the thyroid, you do the adrenal, you do the thyroid, you do the adrenal. But what I find is that most of my patients' adrenal glands don't seem to need to be stimulated, which I think the ginseng is a great little stimulant. And, you know, it's got all kinds of nice pharmacology studies, but really the only thing the vast majority of my patients need is a really good adrenal glandular. And what that does is it gives the adrenal gland the nutrients that it needs to do its job. See, I'd like you to think of the adrenal gland as a factory, and inside the factory there is an assembly line. And on the assembly line, workers go through about 8 steps of converting cholesterol into pregnenolone, to progesterone, to 17-alpha progesterone, to cortisol. And that is all provided by the body. The one thing the body doesn't provide are the tools that the workers, these enzymes, the workers on the assembly line need to do their job. So if you were Henry Ford and you had a factory making cars, the factory is there, the raw materials for the cars are there, the workers are there, but you have to provide for them the wrenches, the spanners, the connectors, the welding, solder, everything it takes to put the pieces together properly. And so what I give my patients before I do any thyroid work or anything else, in fact, almost after the first handshake, I put my patients with chronic fatigue onto a really good quality adrenal cortex glandular. They take this from newborn calves, and the key is newborns, because a lot of glandulars, come from old, exhausted bulls and cows like me. And you don't want my adrenal glands. They're stressed out. Medical school and surgical residency did them in, okay? But they take a calf, a day-old calf. Then that gland is full of the nutrient it got from his mother. And you take those babies last thing at night, first thing in the morning, and sometimes at noon. And that gives the nutrition to the adrenal gland when the adrenal gland needs it. And it's magical. It is amazing.
So is there any need for a person with normal adrenal and thyroid functions to take any type of adaptogen like ginsengs?
I am going to say my ignorance about ginseng could probably fill a book. And I think ginseng does lots of good stuff other than just thyroid and adrenal.
And there's also Siberian ginseng, which is not a Chinese ginseng. But, you know, caller, thank you so much for calling.
Well, thank you,
doctors. That was wonderful.
It.
Yeah, so we'll move on because we only have a few more minutes left and we might have another caller. Great. So where were we, Dr. McDaniel?
We were talking about the adrenal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a little delayed auditory feedback from you guys. So I'm not sure about the phone connection. Let's see. Good. Thank you, Fixer Richard. Thanks, cuz. So when you fix the thyroid, you can put more stress on the adrenal. So supplying the adrenal with first the raw materials it needs to work, and then sometimes a partly assembled adrenal precursor. Women do really well with pregnenolone, which is an over-the-counter precursor of adrenal hormones. That is incredibly safe to use if you dose it properly, because the body will use it if it needs it and will pee it out if it doesn't. So 10 milligrams, 20 milligrams a day of pregnenolone, again taken at bedtime and in the morning, can be really wonderful for women. Men seem to do a little bit better with the HEA, which also bypasses some of the roadblocks that stress and chronic illness have erected in the construction of hormones. So 25 milligrams of DHEA daily for a man can be wonderful if he needs it. And generally, if he doesn't need it, it goes out in the urine and the fish in the river get lucky.
Okay.
So that's pretty good. Taking thyroid hormones can improve your body's ability to maintain a normal blood sugar. And sometimes people with diabetes, the blood sugar goes a little higher when you fix their thyroid because the metabolism is cooking higher. So you kind of have to keep an eye on your patient's overall status of the metabolism as you treat the thyroid. On the other side of that, thyroid hormone sometimes makes it really obvious that women need estrogen. There was one summer in my practice, I had 3 women. I had to pause where we were with their thyroid and give them some estrogens, because as they built up the thyroid, they said, oh, doc, I know the thyroid is too high because I'm having hot flashes and I can't sleep at night. But that wasn't fitting how they were taking the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the thyroid first thing in the morning and at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So why aren't they sleeping at night?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because their lack of estrogen was becoming manifestly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave them some estrogen, and then we got their thyroid where it needed to be. It's
mm-hmm.
pretty fascinating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And caffeine is a real enemy for people who are building up their thyroid dose. And I found this one out myself, too, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a great guinea pig. I got my thyroid biopsy. It was clear I needed thyroid hormone, and I started taking a little pediatric dose, and my hands were shaking, and I was trying to do ear surgery. I thought, what is up with this? And I realized, oh, I'm drinking two pots of coffee every day.
That's not favorable for your adrenal glands either, is it? Or your liver.
No, but it did keep me going.
Do we have a caller?
It kept me going, though.
We do. We have a caller, but we have to, like, make it very short.
Okay.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Very good talk, Dr. McDaniel. I have a question. Years ago, Armour Company made thyroid, I think it was from bovine and whatnot. What has happened to that? That might solve the problem between the T3 and the T4 availability and probably be very cheap if it were still available.
Donna, can you repeat that because I didn't hear it?
He was saying that he did you say from beef Armour Thyroid? He was saying Armour Thyroid would probably be very useful.
Yes.
Right. Would Armour Thyroid would be useful in terms of
it's
providing the
useful,
T3.
But it doesn't solve all the problems. And I had a really angry patient who rightfully was put out with me in 1999 because I said Armour should solve all your problems, and it didn't solve hers. That was when I really felt that I found the T3 to reverse T3 ratio. Armour Thyroid makes a lot of people feel so much better than Synthroid, but it doesn't get them all. Armour Thyroid is 20% T3, but some people need 30%, some people need 40%. And so the other problem with Armour, of course, is autoimmune thyroiditis is the most common cause of thyroid trouble. And when you give people Armour Thyroid, you're giving them the same thyroid proteins to which they are allergic with their autoimmunity. So sometimes the gland will get red and swollen and pretty doggone tender when you treat a person with Hashimoto's with Armour. So I personally take Armour, but I don't give it to all my patients because sometimes it's not what they need.
Thank you.
Is that an answer?
Yes, he said, yes. Thank you. Yes, it did.
More than welcome.
Yeah.
Well, we are at the end of our show.
Okay. So, Dr. McDaniel, thank you so much. This has been just very, very informative. And
I've had a fun time doing it. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, really wonderful to have
Hope
you
not
on.
Confused.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to end with?
I just think that, you know, we have the lab tests and the research is there to validate what I've been talking about. And when docs are willing to give it a try, I'm glad to coach any doc, and I don't charge for it. You know, I got a lot of little friends around the world that email me and send me cases. So if somebody wants to try it, one of the docs in the audience, you know, give them my address. I'd be glad to converse with it because I'm one of the 100 monkeys here. I'm not the smartest guy in the box, but I really think if we can put this forward, then try it. You'll like it.
Do you want to just give out your email if you'd like?
I sure can. It's my name, ABMCDANIEL, and the numerals 0621. At Gmail. So ABMcDaniel 0621 at Gmail.
Well, thank you so much, Alan.
Yes,
and
thank you for joining us today from wonderful Kentucky.
All right. Well, we'll have to have you here in the studio next, okay?
Oh, your list of God's ear, Donna.
All right.
All righty. You have a good afternoon.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Donna. Well, thank you. It was great
thank
to you, see
Cousin
you.
Thank you, Cousin Rich. Thanks for coming back.
Health Talk.
To us.
The first and third Mondays of the month.
Yes.
Alrighty.
And we have Richard with One World up next.
Okay. Go well, everyone.
Ahui ho.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus while everyone is yawning and the day is young. In morning Morgantown.
Aloha, everyone. It is just about 1 o'clock right here on the island of Kauai, and you are tuned to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. And we are Kauai Community Radio, One World Radio happening for you right now. And mahalo to Dr. Donner and her guests again, and Cousin Rich, the return of Cousin Rich to the airways here. So, everything is good here on KKCR. And, you know, One World Radio.